Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades, now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It's a story that defies comprehension, one that unearths a hidden darkness within the walls of a hospital where babies should have been safe. But instead, they were caught in a nightmare, one that lasted for over a year before anyone dared to believe the unthinkable. Lucy Letby, the neonatal nurse entrusted with the most fragile of lives, now stands convicted of unspeakable crimes, the murder of 7 babies and the attempted murder of others under her care. The details are as chilling as they are complex, and as an inquiry into how Letby was able to commit these acts unfolds, new revelations continue to emerge. Today, we delve into one of the most significant pieces of that inquiry, a haunting email sent by Letby to a colleague that hinted at the guilt she may have carried even before her arrest. We'll walk through the twists and turns that led to her capture, explore her delusional attempts to cast herself as the victim, and uncover the psychological and institutional failures that allowed her to continue harming those most vulnerable. It's a complex, multi-layered story, and one that reveals not just the actions of one nurse, but the deep cracks in the very system meant to protect innocent lives. Let's begin where the inquiry starts, with Lucy Letby's early admissions of guilt. In April 2017, more than a year before her arrest, Lucy Letby sent a troubling email to an occupational health nurse. It was a seemingly simple message, but the words were weighted with implication. "I feel as though this must be my fault, and have maybe done something wrong to babies," she wrote, adding, "I blame myself." At the time, Letby was still trying to maintain her image as an innocent and caring nurse, overwhelmed by the deaths of babies on her unit. But those words, so innocuous on the surface, took on a far more sinister meaning once her true actions were uncovered. Letby had already been removed from the neonatal unit by the time she sent that email, redeployed for what was officially described as training purposes. But the real reason for her removal was much darker. Hospital administrators were beginning to suspect that Letby might be connected to an alarming spike in the mortality rate on her unit. Babies who were otherwise stable suddenly deteriorating, often in inexplicable ways. The hospital didn't act right away. In fact, they hesitated, and as the inquiry has shown, that hesitation may have cost lives. Lucy Letby had been working as a neonatal nurse at the Countess of Chester Hospital for several years, caring for babies born prematurely or with health complications. By all accounts, she was competent, well-liked, and devoted to her job. But in 2015, something began to change. Over the course of just over a year, an alarming number of babies in her care died or suffered near-fatal incidents. Babies who were thriving suddenly collapsed without warning. Others, who were already fragile but stable, took inexplicable turns for the worse. Doctors and nurses on the unit were baffled, and soon they began to suspect that these tragedies weren't natural. But suspicions, as powerful as they are, don't amount to evidence. And accusing a trusted colleague of something so monstrous? That requires more than a gut feeling. Letby's email to the occupational health nurse was part of an ongoing exchange between the two, and the inquiry has since revealed that over 750 messages were exchanged during this period. Catherine De Bega, the occupational health nurse tasked with supporting Letby's mental health, had been trying to help the nurse cope with what seemed like overwhelming distress. Letby had been removed from the unit in July 2016, following an internal investigation into the rising mortality rate. De Bega described how she had been asked to provide emotional support to Letby, who at that point appeared to be struggling. In those messages, Letby talked about everything from mundane activities like shopping and cooking to her frustration and sadness over the deaths of the babies. But there was one unusual request Letby made that stood out. She often asked for meetings with De Bega around the anniversaries of the babies' deaths. Now, this is where things start to get even more complicated. Most nurses, most professionals in that environment, do not fixate on anniversaries of patient deaths. And yet, Letby did. According to De Bega's testimony, Letby seemed especially distressed on these anniversaries, as though the memories weighed heavily on her. In one such instance, she requested a meeting to discuss how to cope with her feelings, framing it as though the parents of the deceased babies must have felt even more pain. This is where the inquiry begins to raise red flags. Letby's behaviour was unusual compared to other staff members. While her outward distress seemed like the appropriate response to the loss of life, the frequency of these requests, paired with her other behaviours, started to suggest something more troubling. Letby's self-blame, expressed in that 2017 email, was interpreted at the time by De Bega as a reflection of mixed emotions, an overwhelmed nurse who felt powerless in the face of so much tragedy. But in hindsight, it reads as something far darker. It may have been an early admission of guilt, masked as emotional confusion. Letby continued to downplay her role in these deaths. She insisted that she had done nothing wrong, that she was merely a victim of circumstances. But her colleagues were beginning to see through the facade. The next key moment in this story comes with Letby's reaction to being called a murderer. According to the inquiry, in July 2017, Letby requested another occupational health meeting. This time, she was distressed after hearing that doctors had referred to her as the angel of death and a murderer. It's hard to imagine the weight of those words, how one's own colleagues could begin to suspect that the nurse entrusted with caring for the most vulnerable lives was instead taking them. But Letby's response wasn't what you might expect from someone truly innocent. She was deeply hurt, not by the idea that her actions might have caused harm, but by the fact that her colleagues would say such things. It's a subtle but crucial distinction. Instead of confronting the possibility of her own guilt, she fixated on the personal offence, on being cast as the villain in their eyes. This deflection became a pattern for Letby, one that would continue throughout the investigation and into her trial. She framed herself as the victim, manipulated by a hospital system that turned on her, when in reality, the opposite may have been true. The inquiry also revealed that Letby exchanged hundreds of messages with her occupational health nurse, De Bega. These messages, which covered everything from daily routines to personal issues, often ended with friendly sign-offs and even kisses. On the surface, these communications seemed like the kind of support any caring professional would provide to someone in distress. But in Letby's case, they may have served another purpose. It appears that Letby was using these messages as a way to maintain her innocence, to keep those around her convinced that she was struggling emotionally but had done nothing wrong. She cultivated an image of herself as a caring, compassionate nurse who was being unfairly targeted, and for a while, that image held. But the truth was slowly catching up. It wasn't until May 2017, almost 2 years after the suspicious deaths began, that the police were finally called in to investigate. By this point, several babies had already died or been harmed under Letby's care, and doctors were growing increasingly vocal about their concerns. Among them was consultant paediatrician Dr. Stephen Breary, who had been raising alarms for months, only to be met with resistance from hospital leadership. According to testimony from the inquiry, Brearey and his colleagues had expressed their suspicions early on, but their concerns were downplayed or dismissed altogether. In fact, instead of investigating Letby, hospital executives seemed more interested in silencing the doctors who spoke out. One particularly chilling moment came when Tony Chambers, the hospital's chief executive, reportedly told the consultants to apologise to Letby for upsetting her. The message was clear: don't rock the boat, don't accuse one of your own, and above all, don't pursue the idea that a nurse might be harming babies. The inquiry reveals that Letby was almost allowed to return to the neonatal unit, with hospital executives reassuring her that she had their full support. In one exchange, Letby expressed her gratitude, but again reiterated that she felt something was her fault, that maybe she had done something wrong. Yet her colleagues, blinded by their faith in her, continued to push for her reinstatement. As the investigation progressed, more evidence began to emerge that Letby may have been manipulating not just her colleagues, but also the very doctors tasked with uncovering the truth. One former junior doctor, referred to in the inquiry as Dr. Yu, testified that Letby had misled and perhaps manipulated him into giving her information about the babies she had attacked. Dr. Yu admitted that he believed Letby was struggling with her mental health and had tried to support her, even as suspicions against her mounted. He now regrets those decisions, calling them a massive mistake. In one instance, Letby messaged Dr. Yu about the condition of a baby she had allegedly attempted to murder. She expressed concern that she might have done something wrong, and Dr. Yu, unaware of the full clinical picture, reassured her that she had done everything possible to care for the baby. It's moments like these that paint a picture of a nurse who knew exactly how to exploit the trust and goodwill of those around her. Letby wasn't just a passive figure in all this. She actively worked to maintain her innocence, even as the evidence against her grew. By July 2018, Letby was finally arrested at her home in Chester. The police investigation had uncovered a pattern of suspicious incidents that pointed directly to her. Babies who were otherwise stable were collapsing suddenly, often in ways that didn't make medical sense. The inquiry would later reveal that Letby had been present for nearly all of these incidents. In August 2023, after a lengthy trial, Letby was convicted of murdering 7 babies and attempting to murder 7 others. The details of her crimes are almost too horrific to comprehend. Babies injected with air, given insulin they didn't need, and in some cases, violently assaulted. But even as she faced overwhelming evidence, Letby maintained her innocence. She insisted that she had been framed, that the hospital had scapegoated her, and that she had done nothing wrong. Today, as the Thirlwall inquiry continues, we are left with a troubling question. How did this happen? How did a nurse like Lucy Letby, who had shown early signs of distress and guilt, manage to evade suspicion for so long? The inquiry is slowly piecing together the answer. It's a story of institutional failure, of missed opportunities, and of a woman who, despite her outward appearance, was capable of unspeakable harm. But it's also a story of those who tried to stop her. Doctors who, despite pressure from above, continued to raise concerns. Nurses who saw the warning signs but were too afraid to speak out. And an entire hospital system that failed to protect the very lives it was meant to save. In the end, it may be those institutional cracks, the failures to act, the delays in investigating, that allowed Lucy Letby to continue her deadly spree. The inquiry is expected to continue well into next year, with findings to be published by late autumn 2025. What those findings will reveal remains to be seen, but one thing is certain: the story of Lucy Letby is far from over.
Strap in and get ready to go back in time. Gen X Time Machine is here to transport you back to the glorious days of neon, big hair, and cassette tapes that always needed rewinding.
To figure out where Tupperware, went wrong, we kind of got to start at the beginning.
Remember when MTV actually played music videos? Or when lunch wasn't complete without Dunkaroos? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like trying to recapture the magic of a bygone era.
Yeah. We're diving into all that and more. So if you want to relive the 80s and 90s in all their retro glory, hit up Gen X Time Machine wherever you get your podcasts.
VHS is looking like the obvious winner, right?
Oh, and don't forget the rise of the video rental store, remember?
Subscribe, because who doesn't need another excuse to avoid adulting? You're welcome, the Gen X Time Machine.